You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. This is episode 48. And today, Jason's actually not here, so it's just me. As you may know, both Jason and I work in ministry, but in addition to that, we both also work jobs outside the church as well. And there are times and weeks where our schedules, we're just not able to line them up to be able to record. So our intention was to continue on with the discussion we started last week. We talked about why does God care about who we sleep with? Why does God care about what we do with our bodies in a sexual sense? And ultimately, what it means to glorify God in our bodies. And our intention was to go on and talk, really tackling one of the biggest questions that comes up. And that is from married couples who, you know, they maybe have followed the design of God as single people and have stepped into marriage, and yet they find that their marriage doesn't have the sexual satisfaction that they had thought or were promised by the church. And so, you know, that question arises, is the design of God really that great? And Jason and I want to talk about that because we would argue that it really is that good. However, there's a lot of times, and I think a lot of people in marriage really don't fully embrace the design and picture that God has for our marriage itself, not just sexuality, which begins in intimacy. And so we'll be talking about that next week as Jason kind of leads out that discussion. But I did want to sort of take a episode here and just speak to the single folks that, you know, are listening. And I know we talked a little bit at the end of last episode about, you know, what it means for a single person to glorify God in their bodies. And I wanted to just take a minute and encourage, you know, all of the single listeners out there. I myself am single, and I fully understand, you know, the challenges of all of that. Of course, the advice, you know, from 1 Corinthians 7 is great. If you have the desire, get married. And that's wonderful. And certainly we are not disputing that. In fact, we're encouraging that. If God has designed you for marriage and a marriage relationship, then by all means, you know, pursue that in a healthy context, a God-glorifying context. But in the meantime, what does that mean for your sexuality now? And I wanted to talk about this a little bit because it can be kind of discouraging, you know, when you talk about, you know, topics like this where it's always, well, once you're married, then God has great purpose for you. And what the result of that is that so often for single people, you kind of end up feeling like a second class citizen in relationship to how you're treated in the church. It's like you're sort of less valuable in the kingdom of God and sort of less human in a sense. The way I've often characterized it is to be single in the church kind of sometimes feels like having leprosy, where, you know, you're sort of unclean and sort of kept outside the acceptable mainstream. And or you get comments which are very well-meaning. Oftentimes you'll hear people say stuff like, oh, you know, well, just go get married, as if, you know, there's some magical wives are us or husbands are us out there, and you just go pick out a spouse and then off you go. I mean, we all recognize, obviously, that it's a lot more complicated than that. And so I think it's well-meaning and intended on the part of, you know, married folks that make those kind of comments. But it sort of, I guess, is oftentimes a little discouraging when you hear comments like that, because obviously it's much more difficult than that. And so I really wanted to just take an episode and talk about, you know, how we glorify God in our sexuality as single people. I mean, obviously, the sexual desire, I think, is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, passions that you know, seem to be in the human body. And God really designed it that way. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing in the context of marriage. But I also think it's a good thing in the context of being single as well. And so I want to talk about, you know, just four simple things to sort of encourage all of our single listeners out there, how you can really glorify God in your body as a single person with your sexual desires. And that have to, that not just be something that, okay, God, I'm gonna wait for marriage to glorify you, which of course that's absolutely a noble thing to do. In fact, to live out the design of God in this current culture is actually a courageous thing to do. You know, our society is really screwed up in a lot of ways. We celebrate courage that isn't courage. We celebrate courage as what is most popular and what is most admired in our culture. And that's not courage at all. I mean, right or wrong, courage is exhibited when you are not in the minority, or when you are not in the majority. I mean, when you are not in the popular position, when you're not advocating for the easy way or the popular way, the road most traveled. And certainly in our culture today, and I would say even in the church, to live out the design of God, that really is courageous, because it's very much countercultural. And for the most part, it's not even in line with the way we are living and behaving, even in the life of the church. I mean, we recognize, you know, that in the church, 69% of men struggle with sexual addiction, most prominently pornography, and 35% of the women as well. And so there's a huge swath of us in the church. And I've honestly, as a pastor, met and interacted with many folks that, you know, they claim the name of Christ and, you know, even attend church every week, yet their sexuality is not at all in line with the design that God has for them. And so so we recognize, you know, if you are walking out the design of God, even in the church, you're actually in the minority to some degree. And so, first of all, we want to celebrate that courage. But also, I think there's really four key things in terms of how we as single people glorify God in our sexuality. I would say the first thing is obviously that we're biblically charged not to make it worse. You know, we have these desires, we have these passions. They can be intense. Nobody is doubting that or denying that or seeking to undermine that. I mean, that's a real thing. God made your body biologically sexual, and those desires build up. You know, I can only speak to this as a man because I am a man. But I know this is true for women as well. But in a male sense, you know, biologically, those desires, you know, are they're always there, and they're there for, in some senses, purely biological purpose. And so, so the first thing is to say, you know, we don't make those worse. We'll get into each of these points a little bit later. I just want to run through them all first. The second thing is to say that as a single person, we glorify God in our bodies by pursuing intimacy. And this is actually not unlike the charge of married folks. Now, how it relates out for us does not involve sex. And that's also true for married couples as well. Yes, they engage in sex, and that's part of intimacy. But the greater work of intimacy happens before sex, even for married couples. And so so as a single person, the charge is to pursue that as well. The third thing is to say that we use our sexual energy for missional purpose. we use our sexual energy for missional purpose. We'll talk more about that as well. And then the fourth thing that I really want to talk about is that we see the glory of God first and foremost. That becomes the bedrock upon which all of this sort of rests. And so we'll get into that as well. So let's just begin with, you know, talking about that first thing. God would call us not to make it worse, our sexual desires and energies. I mean, remember, first of all, we were called in 1 Corinthians 6, where we sort of left off last week. In verse 18, it says, run from sexual immorality. Every sin a person commits is outside the body. On the contrary, the person who is sexually immoral sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is a sanctuary of the Holy Spirit, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body. And so that's sort of the underpinning charge to glorify God in our body, not through sexual immorality. So we're actually to stay away from, actually run from, like totally, completely get away from sexual immorality and anything that means. Another verse that really speaks to this is in the Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 4. It says, I charge you, do not stir up or awaken love until the proper time. And what these verses are getting at is to say that, you know, yes, we have this sexual desire and we can do one of two things with it. We can encourage it, which is to feed it or to dwell on it or to draw into it. And the result is that desire becomes massively more intense. I mean, the more you feed it, the more it grows, and the result is that this desire becomes what feels to be unmanageable, you know, when we walk down that road. And so the biblical charge, the encouragement, is to say, okay, don't go there. We don't go anywhere or do anything that encourages or awakens or stirs up those desires or passions. And that means, you know, what we think about becomes really important. What we watch, what we allow to take in our mind and our eyes, you know, and I'm not even talking about pornography or those sort of things at this point. I'm talking more of just those other things, those everyday things that can actually stir up those desires or encourage those desires in just the music we listen to or the things we think about or all of the various, you know, media consumption or, you know, all the different outlets for having those desires stirred up in us. It's like we are charged, we're called to stay away from it. The less time I spend thinking about sexuality or sex or sexual desires or any of those sort of things, it's better for me, because then I don't have those same, you know, passions and longings, at least as intently. The desire is still there. The desire is always there, but it's certainly much more intense when, you know, when we think down that road or when we go to those places. And so the encouragement from the gospel is to say, first of all, we glorify God in our bodies, in our sexuality, by not going down those paths, by not indulging or engaging, you know, those things, those desires, all of that, awakening that energy in that sense. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to say that we are called to pursue intimacy, and for, I would say, everybody, a big desire in, or a big driver of sexual desire is not actually about sex. It's actually about connection. Remember, we are made in the image of God. We're told in Genesis chapter 1, and we are made like God. We're made after God. And God is in perfect community. He has eternally existed. Yes, one God, but in his Trinitarian nature as Father, Son, and Spirit. So there is this perfect unity, perfect union of the Godhead in his Trinitarian nature, with the Father pouring out his love and his life-giving nature to the Son and the Spirit, and them delighting in that glory back to the Father. And as an overflow of that came creation, came us. And so we're made in that image. So we're made for connection, for relationship, for intimacy in an emotional and spiritual sense with other people. And I think a great example of this that's often overlooked is in Proverbs chapter 7, we get this parabolic story as Solomon is giving wisdom to his son. But I think it really speaks well to this idea. It begins in chapter 7, verse 6. It says, "At the window of my house, I looked through my lattice. I saw among the inexperienced, I noticed among the youth, a young man lacking sense, crossing the street near her corner. He strolled down the road to her house. At twilight, in the evening, in the dark of night, a woman came out to meet him, dressed like a prostitute. Having hidden agenda, she is loud and defiant. Her feet do not stay at home. Now in the streets, now in the square, she lurks at every corner. She grabs him and she kisses him. She brazenly says to him, 'I've made fellowship offerings. Today I fulfill my vows. So I came out to meet you, to search for you. I have found you. I've spread a covering on my bed, rich colored linens from Egypt. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh and cinnamon. Come, let us drink deeply of lovemaking until morning. Let's feast on each other's love. My husband isn't home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the time of the full moon. She seduces him with her persistent pleadings. She lures with her flattering talk. He follows her impulsively, like an ox going down to the slaughter, like a deer bound towards the trap, until an arrow pierces its liver, like a bird darting into a snare. He doesn't know that it will cost him his life." So this story is really interesting because it presents for us, you know, the lure of sexual sin and the result. I mean, obviously we see that sexual sin, like all other sin, leads to death. And certainly that's true in this case as well. It's always true. Sin never leads to the glory of God. Sin never leads to the fullness of our design as God has created us to be. It always leads us to death and destruction. And that's certainly true here. But it's easy to miss what I think is so critical in this story. You notice this woman is flattering him massively. You know, she's saying, "I've been looking for you. I've been searching for you. I want you. I need you." It's all emotional language. It's all meant to draw you in. You know, she wants you. You're wanted. You're needed. You're desired. These are all realities of intimacy. It's actually very little about sex. In fact, sex is the least important thing in this particular text. It very much is the emotional, the spiritual, the relational. This guy wants to be desired. He wants to be loved. He wants to be cared about. He wants to be matter. In terms of relationship, and here is this woman presenting to him what seems to be this full picture of intimacy. Now, granted, because it's a sinful picture, the result for him is death. It doesn't lead to the design of God. But I think the instruction for us is to recognize that we were created in the image of God. We are created for this intimacy. We are created for these desires to be wanted, to be loved, to be desired, to matter, to have deep emotional connection, to have deep spiritual connection. We were meant for that kind of thing. And as a result, part of glorifying God in our sexuality is to step into that design, to step into community and experience that in a healthy context. For a single person, this doesn't involve sex at all, but we still are fully able to experience intimacy as God designed it in faith community with other brothers and sisters in Christ that can fully know us and fully accept us, and we can know them and accept them and be able to walk together doing life on life in a fully transparent way. I mean, that's the beauty of gospel intimacy. And so the encouragement is to say, if you want to glorify God in your sexuality, then that needs to be true of you. You need to be seeking intimacy in relationship in a healthy context. And the third thing is obviously use that energy for missional purpose. Use that sexual energy for the purposes of God. I think one of the cool ideas that has been sort of a popular trend today, really outside the church, this isn't so much a church thing, but it's an idea that's called transmutation, which is basically the idea is recognizing that biologically you have a energy that comes from your sexuality. It sort of builds up and it sort of exists biologically in your body. And the desire is to release it, you know, in a sexual context. Yet what's pretty cool and what we're realizing is you don't have to release it that way. In fact, that energy can be used for other purposes. And so the idea of transmutation is that basically you take that energy and instead of using it in a sexual sense, you move it and you use it in a different sense for a different purpose. And I think in a God-glorifying sense, the way we do this is we take that energy and we use it for gospel purpose. We take that energy and we use it to further the mission of God or the call of God in our lives. It's a pretty cool thing when you realize that that can actually be directed specifically towards the proclamation of the gospel, the advancing of the love of Christ in your community. I know for me, as a single person and as a ministry leader, I am able to spend a lot of time working on ministry that, if I was married, would have to be devoted to, you know, family time. And so there have been many, many nights where I'm still at the church at 10 p.m., at 11 p.m., at midnight, either, you know, meeting with people or working through, you know, gospel issues or questions or, you know, working on service order or preparing sermons or, you know, doing all these things that you are able to devote this energy towards that are God glorifying and further the advancement of the gospel. And it's really quite a cool thing when you think about it that way. It's like, you're given this extra energy that can be put towards gospel purpose. And when you think about it, like, what a cool and God-glorifying way to really glorify God in your sexuality, because that's what it is. You're using that sexual energy, but instead of wasting it in a sexual sense, you're actually using it for good, God-glorifying gospel purpose. And that's really a beautiful thing. Maybe I'm taking that too far. I don't know, but it is something that I've thought quite a lot about. And I really think there's something there, for sure, that can really be used, for good godly purpose. And I've certainly seen that true in my life. And I think others have as well. So just throwing that out there. And then the fourth thing is obviously to see the glory of God. This is really the critical thing, the sort of culmination of this. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, since we have such a large cloud of witnesses surrounding us, Let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that lies before us, keeping our eyes on Jesus, the source and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that lay before him, endured the cross, despised the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For considering him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, so that you won't grow weary and lose heart. In struggling against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your own blood, and you have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons. My sons, do not take the Lord's discipline lightly or faint when you have reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son he receives. I love this passage because it really encourages us. First of all, it recognizes and encourages we have this great cloud of witnesses, those who have gone before us, that are there as an example for us to show us, those who, you know, by faith have endured and have continued to walk and live according to God's good purpose. And that's a really cool thing, an encouraging thing. So we have this great cloud of witnesses surrounding us. They're encouraging us to endure by faith, to seek after Christ, to run the race with endurance. And we have their examples that they've done that as well. But it doesn't just stop there. You know, we're encouraged to lay aside the weight and the sin that so easily entangles us. How do we do this? Well, it tells us. It says, let us run with endurance the race that lies before us. How do we do that? We keep our eyes on Jesus, the source and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that lay before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. The example there is that we are to look at Jesus, who did what? Well, he endured the suffering for the glory of God. And what does he fix his eyes on? He fixes his eyes on the glory of God. So we're charged to look at Jesus. And what is Jesus doing? He's looking at the glory of God. I mean, how cool is that? It is to say, when we have our eyes fixed on the glory of God, the other things that distract us, or those things that get in the way of pursuing what God has for us, that distract us and draw us away into, you know, weight and into sin, those things become so much less important when we see the glory of God. And the cool part is that we see Jesus doing exactly the same thing. He has his eyes fixed on the glory of God. And the coolest part of that is that becomes the example for us. Jesus is looking at the glory of God, and he's seeing the glory of God. And the result is then he's able to run. He's able to endure everything that happens because he sees the glory of God. And when we see the glory of God, then all these other things just become so trivial. I mean, all the sins and desires that have, you know, that so easily get in the way of us doing, of us seeing, of us running after Christ, become just so incredibly useless, so trivial, so pointless. Just picture to see that we fix our eyes on Jesus, who also fixes his eyes on the glory of God. And it totally changes our perspective on all these things. I was recently reading an article, and in the article, there was this quote from a guy named Ed Shaw. And he was talking about sexuality and how we can live a life in and for Christ without ever experiencing sexuality because we fix our eyes on the glory of God. He put it this way. This is his quote. He says, I know there are many today who think it is a great tragedy to die a virgin, but I hope I will. because I know that I will not have lost out on anything too significant, because the Bible teaches me that I will have missed only a brief foretaste that sex is meant to be of the eternal reality of the perfect union between Christ and his church that I will one day experience forever. And any fleeting pleasure I've given up in the meantime will be more than worth it then. I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful heart. What a beautiful just desire to see the glory of God like that. I mean, I've read this quote so many times over the last several weeks, and it just amazes me by what a heart. That is a heart that sees the glory of God. That is a heart that sees all that God is and recognizes, based on the beauty of God, the closer we get to the glory of God, the closer we get to the holiness of God, then all of these other things just become so trivial, so useless. It is to say that the more we pursue Christ, the more we're able to glorify God in our body, because we recognize the greater thing. We recognize the closer or the fullness of his picture, of his design and purpose for us. And that's not to say sexuality is bad. If you are married, then you get to glorify God in that way as well. But if you're single, you do not miss out on getting to experience what it is to glorify God in your sexuality. And that should be so encouraging. I mean, take heart. I mean, even from, you know, the old hymn, which says, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of this earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace." This is what it means to glorify God in our sexuality as a single person. I'm not saying it's easy. There are certainly times where that battle, that struggle is super intense. And certainly when I get my eyes off of Jesus, when I get my eyes off of Christ, and I end up looking at all that I desire and don't have, or, you know, I seek the God of this world, which is sex, when I'm worshiping that idolatry, then this idea of glorifying God in my body becomes just so awful and painful and difficult. Yet when I have my eyes fixed on the glory of God, when I am, you know, not getting caught up in pornography or drugged down in masturbation or engaged in sexual relationships or any of these sort of things, when I am instead fixing my eyes on his glory and I am pursuing intimacy in a healthy, God-glorifying sense, and I'm using that energy for missional purpose, and I'm not making it worse, it becomes an actual joyous thing, something we're excited about, to get to experience the glory of God in our bodies. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting site, or go to our website, faithunpacked.com. And if you have any questions, feel free to get in touch with us. You can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on social media. And join us next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.